Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen. I'm a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And my guest tonight is the host of a very popular life-transforming internet radio show. I'm pleased to welcome Michael Gray, host of Open Air with Sherry Huber. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Jen. It's great to be here.
So, Michael, the show is in its ninth year.
Yes. How did that happen?
I know. That is shocking that it turned 8 years. The November of 2010, I think, was the eighth anniversary. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today and thinking how many people have come to practice in that period of time for whom the radio show is just a given. It's just part of practice. And I was thinking how it's kind of like me being at the monastery where, you know, the buildings must have always been here because when I got here, they were all here. So
yes.
It's just fun to realize, no, in fact, believe it or not, there was practice before the radio show. And I wonder if you could tell us a little about the history of how it came to be.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. I found practice, or practice found me, somehow that happened around, I think, 2001, something like that. And I was about probably a year or two into practice, and I realized that this is really helpful information.
Yeah.
This is really useful information. And for me, it's fun because what I love about practice is that information comes with no agenda. It's kind of, this is how life works. And if you're interested in exploring that and finding it for yourself, here it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So practice doesn't come with any shoulds or this is how it's supposed to be done or that sort of thing. It's just, here's some really useful information that you might want to have.
Yes. And I realized, you know, I hear this often. People find practice and then they get really excited about telling other people about it.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a version of that, of how can we share this information more widely and make it more widely available so people can avail themselves of it if that's what they choose.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history.
It's kind of fun to, I remember back in the days at Stanford when you and Sherry were truly on the radio.
Yes. Yes, that was fun. There in the studio there?
There in the studio. And then you had to be right there in the Palo Alto area in order to hear it, right?
Let's see. The nice thing about the Stanford station is they have that local, you know, radio signal.
Yeah.
And then at some point, I don't know if it was right when we started, they started broadcasting over the internet as well.
Okay. And then, of course, all of those shows, then we moved to another platform, which I guess World Talk. That was internet-based,
yes.
Right? And so, of course, as soon as the Stanford show started, we began archiving, and I don't even know how many archives we must have at this point.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly either. You know, there's roughly 50 shows a year times 8 years, so that's 450.
That's a lot of shows. So it's amazing the testimonials that we've gotten from people over the years. I was just reading some of them today, and I picked out a few. Here's one that talks about kind of the pioneering nature of the radio show. It says, it seems that Open Air sort of pioneered what we now think of as at-home practice opportunities. Whenever it started years ago, it was the first opportunity I had to deepen my practice on a regular basis, no matter where I was in the world. The simplicity of offering the same format and privileged environment of group at the monastery to the world has been huge. And I think that's one of the things that's so powerful about it, is that it does offer that same, really the exact same group, kind of the way, the privileged environment of it, the one-on-one interaction that everyone else gets to benefit from. It offers that to everyone all over the world each week.
Yes. Yes, it's really great. That's my experience of it, exactly.
There's a couple more that I thought were really fun. One person talked about, I remember reaching out to call the first time and how scary that was, but it is never scary once I get on the call. I thought that would be a good advertisement for people to call in.
Yes.
And then saying, I listen to the archives every chance I get. Anytime I find myself feeling low, I just turn on my iPod and feel instantly connected to practice. Just to hear from Sangha from every possible corner of the planet opens my heart.
Yes.
I'm curious, Michael, if you have any favorite radio show moments that stand out for you over the years.
There are a couple. We early on, we did a 2-hour live in-person show at Stanford.
I forgot about that.
You remember that one?
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, live from Stanford.
Yes, oh. Yes. So somewhere in the archive of 1-hour shows, there's a single 2-hour show.
And that it was in a sort of, I mean, a large room where, I mean, there
yes.
were many, what, 100 people, guests in the room with
yes.
you and Sherry as you were doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
And there are, more so early on, there were a number of technical challenges. And one I remember is that I think it was at Stanford, and I was talking for a couple minutes at the beginning of the show, and at some point I realized that there was no sound going out. So I was talking to myself for a couple of minutes there.
I see, yeah. It's one of those very Zen moments, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And there were other moments like that at Stanford and occasionally on the Internet broadcast. And one thing that sticks out for me is how Sherry has modeled practice for us in those moments. And fortunately, because she's modeling, it really assists me in attempting to model practice in that life happens. You know, technical challenges are kind of par for the course.
Yeah.
And I can either get bent out of shape about it and twist myself up into a pretzel, or I can kind of relax and really make myself available to solve the problem.
Yes, exactly. That if we get into a story or get into do a process around, oh my gosh, now what are we going to do, then we're not available to actually see what very likely the other alternative there is for us there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And as you say, I mean, Sherry's just the master of that. She's modeling that for us all the time. And then
yes.
you as the host get to kind of jump on board with that. And that hosting the show, I imagine, is a big part of your practice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a huge gift to me. And I was thinking about this earlier today, and the word that kept coming up was service. How can I serve practice?
Yes.
How can I attempt to repay this enormous gift that has been given to me over and over and over again? And it's a huge opportunity for me to show up, serve practice, let go. And as you know from offering practice, it's really hard to maintain a story with conditioning while you're attempting to show up for other people.
Yes, yes, exactly, which is why so often, I can't remember where it was just recently, I was listening to somewhere Sherry was talking, and talking about how service is just a natural outgrowth of practice because, as you say, we're given to so much and then we want to give, and how beautifully that complements practice, because when we're serving, when we're showing up for, quote, others in that way, we can't be identified. You know, we're asked, we're invited by life to step beyond who we think we are and kind of be part of the much larger picture.
Yes, yes. And it's really great because there will be times in my life when there's content that's more active or I'm more susceptible to with conditioning. And 4:30 on Tuesday, that all has to go bye-bye for at least an hour and a half.
That's great.
And often longer because of that lovely, you know, kind of afterglow and twinkling that comes
yes.
from a period of practice.
Yes. Well, and it reminds me of the image that we sometimes talk about of playing a sport where, so, you know, if I'm trying to master my game and I hit the shot just so, then I have that to reference back to. I know what I'm going for.
Yes.
And when you said that, I just saw that you've got that hour and a half every Tuesday. You know what that feels like. You know it's possible because you do it. And so you have something to reference in other times where maybe it's more challenging or you don't have quite such a concrete thing to call you to, no, you got to let it go. But you have that place that you can reference and practice.
Yes, yes, yes. And what I've realized over the years is there's nothing that can prevent me from showing up and being here and doing the radio show.
Right.
And as you say, it's great to prove that to ourselves over and over again when conditioning has some story about why I can't be present now, why I can't show up for this.
Exactly, because what's possible for us is to have that same sentence be true except drop the radio show at the end of it.
Yes.
Right?
So yeah, now you've got to reflect that sentence back to me.
Okay, I know. I knew you were going to say that. So it's possible to be present and to be here and to drop all the stories, period. Right? All the time, even if I'm not going to be hosting the radio show or whatever it is, but that's for each of us. I project what we're, you know, when we facilitate, when we're, you know, doing whatever we do in our lives. We all have that place where we just have to be here. We have to be at center. And so we have those places to draw on to realize I could do that all the time in every moment.
Yes. Yes. And why not, since it's much more pleasant?
So I want to end with this last quote. The radio show is a wonderful experience of Sangha. It's a perfect way to feel connected. I'm very grateful to Sherry and Michael for showing up and being there every Tuesday. It is such a gift. So I think I can, on behalf of the Sangha, say a deep, deep gesho to both you and Sherry for coming up on 9 years of service on the radio show. So thank you, Michael, and have a fabulous show.
Thank you so much, Jen. It's been a pleasure. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. I had no idea we'd been doing this for 9 years. You know, somebody just asked me about that recently, and I said, gosh, I don't know. It seems like a long time back there when we were sitting across that desk at Stanford. And it was.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Great. It is a, yeah. Thank you, Michael. That's a heck of an effort.
You are very welcome. And it's an effort that I have received as well as given, or however that goes.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of the best part about service.
Exactly.
It's hard to know who's getting the most out of it. Because I know it's true for me. I mean, what you two were talking about when I've said this any number of times, but when I came out of the monastery where I trained, I knew that if I didn't set up my life to have things that I had to show up for, I would soon not be showing up, because I'd seen plenty of people go down that road. And so it's that I will do this at this time every day. I will do this. I will do that. I will do that. I will do that. And the element of showing up for other people, knowing that that other people are counting on me to ring those bells in meditation, or show up for the sitting group that they're ringing bells in, or show up for a workshop or a radio show or whatever it is, you know, it makes it easier for me not to listen to those voices that say, oh, I don't want to, I don't feel like it, that's too hard, I'm tired, I would, whatever, you know, it's just what I do. And,
yeah.
So it's a tremendous service for ourselves.
Yes, yes. Great. And how are you doing today?
Pardon me?
How are you doing today?
Fantastic. Yeah. You?
Good. Good. And grateful for practice.
Yeah.
Had some content come up recently, and with the recording and listening practice, there's an opportunity for, you know, instead of that content to kind of blindside me, to kind of be with it as it comes in and comes through.
Yes. I had an opportunity to spend a little time with somebody I've known for years and years and years, but haven't seen for about 3 years because she moved to another country. And so she wasn't aware of this practice. And I started talking about it. And at one point she said, now, do you do all those practices? Do you do all those things that you write about, or do you just kind of write about them because you know it would be helpful to other people? Oh, recording and listening is my favorite thing to do every day, you know, along with sitting meditation and a few dozen other favorite things that I have. But, yeah, it's a talk about a gift to yourself, huh?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Sherry, I have some announcements here.
All right.
You will be at Crystal Way Bookstore in San Francisco this Friday night.
That would be just a couple of 3 days from now, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I will see you there.
Oh, fantastic. Good.
Yes. And that's Friday, February 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. And you'll be at Open Circle in Berkeley on March 20th at 7 p.m. I think that's a Sunday.
Yes, Sunday evening.
And there's a new email class starting April 1st. and it's a new session of It's Time to Feel Good.
That's right. So that recording and listening, it's so many people, silly people, didn't sign up for that first go-round, and then all of their friends are doing it. And so we're going to do another round, and we're setting it up so that if somebody's doing it for the first time, they are challenged, because that's not hard to do if you're doing something for the first time. But the people who have done it before will be on a special track, so it's going to support them in continuing their recording and listening practice too. So I'm pretty thrilled about that.
Well, that's fun. And then on Sunday, May 8th at 5 p.m., you'll be in Asheville, North Carolina at Malaprop's Bookstore.
Will.
You'll be talking about what you practice is what you have.
That's pretty much all I talk about. And people are still grateful that I've gotten off of that, the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention. What is she? How is she going to say that same thing in the future using new words?
Well, we seem to need to hear it over and over.
Well, we do, don't we? Yeah, we can't say it or hear it too much, so there we are.
And then you'll be in Rhinebeck, New York at the Omega Institute, and that's May 27th to 30th.
Mm.
Come back to the West Coast, and you'll be at Esalen for June 11th and 12th, and that's Spirituality and Business.
Spirituality and Business with my dear friend Mark Lesser.
Wonderful. And then in the middle of July, you will facilitate the Not What But How retreat at the monastery.
Gosh, Michael, I'm getting tired just listening to this.
It's getting longer each week, I've noticed.
No, I'm excited because as we've already established, that makes sure that I'll be practicing diligently at least up through next July.
Great. Great. And probably long after that.
I hope. I plan.
Great. I'd like to remind our callers that we are focusing on one topic and 5 minutes, and we'll talk to a lot of our friends today.
Good. Yes.
Yay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. It's Jonathan from England.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi.
How are you doing, Sherry?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Very well.
Perfect. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to share a few things, just check in, and I've been having a great time making connections with some new books that I've been reading.
Mm-hmm.
And can I talk about other people's work on the call?
Well, you certainly can. You know, I probably won't have a whole lot to say about it because I probably won't know anything about it, but I'm happy to hear whatever you want to say about it.
Well, I picked up a book by a woman called Brené Brown called The Gifts of Imperfection, and another one called I Thought It Was Just Me, and she researches human connection, and it's really a book about about stories in our minds and how we respond to those by feeling ashamed. You know, because we believe that we're not worthwhile, we believe that there's something wrong with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found that the way that she wrote about it really gave me a grounding in the practice, because the experience that I've been having is going to work and being the way I always am. You know, gossiping with people, you know, working, like striving, just going back into the normal Western mode.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming home, meditating, sitting down, relaxing, and kind of having this divided life.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to find ways to kind of bring that together, you know. And that book really helped me to ground it in kind of like my real experience. And it also reminded me of a book by a woman called Bell Hooks from years ago called Teaching to Transgress, which is about the black movement and Martin Luther King and the oppression of blacks in society. And how when we're told these negative stories about ourselves, whether it's outside or inside your mind, we believe them, and that's the source of the disempowerment. It's not really the world and society. It's because of because we believe the story.
Yes. Yes. My way of saying it is that it's not possible to suffer without a conversation in your head.
Yeah. I think the key thing for me was, I think that one of the big shifts is when you're looking at breaking out of oppression or breaking out of some kind of cycle, we're all conditioned to deal with something in the external world. And both of these books have really helped me to see, to connect with the practice, the fact that once you do the interior work of disbelieving the story, then you can start addressing things in the external world.
Yes.
And
probably because you've realized there isn't an external world.
Well, in the sense that what you think is external world isn't really once you've changed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So very, very helpful, isn't it, before we run out there to try to fix the world, to make sure we've done everything we can to assist the person who's going to do the fixing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the place where I was coming from is like looking at things like Martin Luther King's, some of the things that he said, you know, like the reason the oppressor has you in domination is because he wants to keep you there. You know, it's a power game. And
yes.
And we have to resist. But what I didn't understand before is that he made an internal change. He stopped believing the story that the dominating oppressor was telling him, that he wasn't worthwhile as a black person, before he started trying to address anything in the real world. And you could apply that to anything,
yes.
Gay people, overweight people, women,
right.
A class issue.
Right.
It's like if you actually believe you're not worthwhile as you are, how can you fight the oppression? And that
right.
was like a huge hint, that was like a huge piece for me to understand how the practice might affect me in my real life, because it's affecting me in my mood,
mm-hmm.
and my attitude,
mm-hmm.
but it's not really affecting my real life yet.
Well, yes, there are two things about that for me. One, you actually can't know that. And
right.
There are three things. And the yet is an important word in that notion. And also to keep a little eye on the one who is doing the assessing.
Sure.
Because the one who's doing the assessing very likely has a bias toward you believing that it's not working.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like it's working in some ways, and in other ways, it's like I'm kind of waiting for the effect, you know?
Yes, and that process is the one to keep your eye on, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Helpful stuff, huh?
It's great. I mean, I just wanted to share it because it's been such a powerful process for me, meditating, reading certain books, dealing with, well, for the sake of argument, let's call them real-world problems, you know, that we all have.
We call them other-world problems.
Okay. And I think that the steps that I've taken, you know, the insights that I've had and the experience that I've had, I mean, I just, like, recommend anybody to pick up those books, because it feels a bit like a group now. Do you know what I mean? Like when I call the radio show, it feels like a group. You kind of think, well, this is what I tried, and you know, I got this out of it, and so that's what I wanted to do tonight.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
You know, I'm coming to see you June 18th. Michael didn't tell you, but did you know that that's the case?
I heard a rumor. Yeah.
Good. Mark that on your calendar, would you?
I will do, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay. Have a great show.
All right. Good night.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Sherry. This is Sherry in San Francisco.
Good evening, Sherry.
Hi.
Hello.
What's going on?
I'm just doing my committed call to not practice anything before I call.
Very good. So you have not been preparing diligently all day.
That is exactly right. All day I've been battling those same old voices,
uh-huh,
telling me the same old things.
God, they're tedious, aren't they?
It is. Yeah. It's funny because I made a recording the last time I was going to call in the show and just sort of said all the things the voices say and, you know, how they try and talk me out of not calling because I'm not prepared, because I'm not going to have anything important to say. And it was funny listening to it today because it was like, oh, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm, uh-huh, yep.
Right. Yeah, I know you. And the thing that never ceases to amaze me is that before we catch on to that, they seem really compelling.
Yes.
And then when we actually step back enough to see them and hear them, it's kind of embarrassing. You know, that we would devote so much of our lives to following them around.
Honestly, and the fact that, you know, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say, it's like I almost got caught again today, you know, so it's like I started hearing the thing about, you know what, there's no point in calling if you don't have anything that you're going to say. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, no, wait a minute, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I could, you know, it's so amazing how it's almost like hypnosis what they do.
Yes. I think that that's actually a very good way to look at it. That they are, the voices are able to talk to us in a way, the tone of voice, the choice of words, the you know, the whole cadence of the thing, in a mesmerizing, hypnotic sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hooked into the perception that they're creating before we're aware of what's happening.
That, yes, that is so true. Oh, that's so true. And you know, the thing that saved me today, especially when I was listening to the recording that I had done, was that the person who had done the recording was saying, you know, there's someone who made this commitment, and it's really important to her. And you're going to go, you know, you're going to hear these voices saying these things, but, you know, I would really like you to remember this person who is waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And that really touched me. I mean, it was really amazing. It was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So if you have a child that you've promised can go to X, whatever it is, on a certain day, you would not dream of saying, no, I don't feel like that. I've changed my mind.
Oh, yes. I know.
You can just sense that child's disappointment and hurt and confusion and just feeling really unvalued, uncared for, and the result that would have, the lack of trust that would be there, the feeling of abandonment, and yet we're trained to do that to ourselves at the merest whisper from one of those voices.
Yes, I know. You know, and the thing that I was thinking is it's like, had I given in, and any time I do give in my life, it is also validating this whole conditioning that I've had all of my life, which is, if I'm not prepared, I'm not worth it. I'm not valuable. I'm not articulating it very well, but there's something so important in this practice for me of just showing up.
Yes, well, and I don't think I've ever really seen it quite so clearly as I did when you just said that. Of course, there's a huge emphasis on being prepared. Because if that's what's important, then we can be sure you're not going to be present.
Yes.
Yeah. So conditioning, wanting us to be in the future or in the past, would have a real investment in getting people to believe how important it is to be prepared, how irresponsible yet terrifying it is to just be in the moment without being prepared. So it's guaranteed that our lives are going to be in the hands of conditioning and not available to life, because we've been convinced that that's the way to be.
Yes. Yes.
The good, right person way to be is out of the moment.
And it's so, you know, it's like I've been really watching in other places of my life where, you know, being able to practice has been so important on these calls for me. And I've been able to do, you know, sometimes, you know, outside of the practice, you know, if I have an important phone call or something, to just show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a wonderful experience. It's so completely different.
Yes. 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 It's that... when we're in conditioning, the most amazing, extraordinary experiences, it can be taken away from us through a conversation in the head.
Mm.
When we're present, the most mundane, prosaic, ordinary experience, it can be completely delightful and fulfilling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great, because it just became so crystal clear that that's why I can call each time and just say the same thing.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, because you're not saying the same thing, because you're different and I'm different. Everybody else is different. The whole world is different. And so it can't possibly be the same thing. The only time you could actually say the same thing is if you told me the same story that conditioning is telling you inside your head. I mean, technically, even that wouldn't be the same, but it would sure sound a lot closer to the same.
Mm.
Yeah?
So
yes. You get together with a friend who, you know, does the same whining complaint for an hour every time you get together, and to the point that you're thinking, oh, I just can't do this anymore. This is just not being a good time. You can get together with a friend for whom nothing is really going on. They're just enjoying life, involved, engaged, nothing extraordinary, nothing life-changing, but they're just participating in life, and you leave energized and enlivened and eager for the next get-together.
Yes. And I'm here and I'm listening to you, and they're like rattling off a million things at me, and it's exactly what you're talking about, you know? they're so revved up at
mm-hmm.
all of this,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you can just say, you people calm down. Your life is not that important, actually, and certainly not that important to me.
I know. I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Those are that I realize when I'm when I'm recording and listening, I'm happy, I'm grateful, I'm excited. I swear, I think that's on every recording that I've ever made, and it's always a surprise to me when I listen to it that I said it again. Because I am so there in the experience when I'm saying it, it's such a brand new revelation that I'm surprised that, oh, yeah, I said that on the last, oh, and the one before that, and on the one before
that. Yeah. And you know, that is the experience of calling in. And I loved the good news update today,
mm-hmm.
because I've always loved this radio show. It's been such an important part of my practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have that experience, like, whenever I call in or hear the archive shows, it's like, I love that show. And it feels new each time, you know? It's
like, and we all say pretty much the same thing over and over and over. It's not just me. It's everybody. I'm the identified patient, but it's everybody. We just say the same things over and over. But we love the experience, so, and those are the words that go with the experience, so it's a happy thing.
It is. And the other word that always comes up is connected.
Yeah.
I feel like whenever I call in, and the same thing with the audio recordings, it's just, I feel connected.
Yes, yes. And, of course, there's a reason for that, because what you practice is what you have, and when your attention is on connecting, you feel connected. And, of course, what conditioning is trying to do is get us focused on a conversation about separation, and then that's the experience we have, which is a big argument for always staying with Sangha as much as possible in some form or another.
I love it. And it makes me think I'm going to hang up so more people can have that wonderful feeling right now.
All right, then.
I'll see you Friday here in San Francisco.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
See you
Well, deep gosho to both of you.
All right, and to you, Sherry. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to listen to Stop, Drop, and Breathe and Sangha Market, and then we'll be right back.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
This from Living Compassion.
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Yes.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
It took me by surprise.
I couldn't tell if you dropped the phone.
Well, I have a pair of headset that I can listen to easier if I don't think, and I didn't dial quick enough tonight, so I didn't think there was any chance I'd get on.
Oh. And here you are. What's happening?
Well, okay, emotional roller coasters.
Uh-huh. And?
Melinda kind of said to me a couple radio shows ago that I seem to have a habit of, the thing that I'm most afraid of is the human experience.
Hmm.
So I have these emotional moments, and then I have a reaction to the emotional moments, and then I'm kind of off to the races.
Hmm. Because there's a belief that you shouldn't be emotional. Is that the?
Well, it's just all these danger signs. Danger goes off.
With emotion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not okay. and if I were the right person, then I'd be able to maintain and control my emotions.
Yes, well, there is a lot of cultural conditioning about that. Have you ever thought, though, of pretending that you're Italian?
Pretending I'm Italian.
Mm-hmm.
I have when I've eaten Italian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get to have all of this emotion and energy, and it's considered vitality and excitement, and it's big and flowing
and human.
And human.
I have this idea that if I'm practicing correctly, then I just have the happy emotions.
Mm-hmm. And have you considered getting rid of that idea?
Well, it's a lot easier than getting rid of the emotions, I'm finding.
Yes, and why would you want to? You can get rid of all of the emotions, and it could either be called severely depressed or dead. Right? Because it's true that what humans,
yeah,
we are sentient beings. We feel. We are,
yeah,
connected, as Sherry pointed out. We're connected to life. And life is big, right? I mean, there's
life
a lot
big
going on all the time in life. It's just manifesting all over the place. If we called that manifestation emotion, then we could say life is very emotional.
It does seem to be so.
Hmm? So who would have, what would have an investment in getting somebody to believe that what is natural for their being is wrong?
Hmm.
I bet we both know the answer, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a priori. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, truly, I know that I make things sound easier than we all know they are. And with something like that, I have a belief that I shouldn't be emotional, that if I were the right person, I wouldn't have emotion. When I am,
I don't deserve kindness when I am having emotion.
Yes. Yeah. I should be punished. So, you know, you can write all of those things down. And then it's really important to simply say, that is not true. I choose not to believe that any longer. And every time any of it comes up, any aspect of that, to repeat, I don't believe that. That's not true. I don't accept that. Because the way it's maintained is that the belief is reinforced every time there's a flicker of sensation that can be labeled emotion. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's important, I think, to acknowledge and affirm that that is not a part of your belief system.
When you just kind of said that, I just kind of saw part of my karmic triggering, because my response to emotion is normally just to shut down and isolate.
And
I'll just take my emotions off here in the corner.
Yes, and what would have an investment in you shutting down and isolating? So you can,
yeah,
you can see that it, every step of the way, you are in service to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can see it, and I'm still caught.
Well, you will be caught as long as you are participating in the trap. So not participating in the trap, I would suggest the first step is to affirm that this is not a belief system that you choose to go along with. Do you record and listen?
Okay. I hate it. I really, really hate it.
ego.
This
egocentric karmic conditioning. Self-hate.
I have now broken 4 recorders.
Hates it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so ego hates it. Of course it does. Because it's the way that you could move beyond it. So of course it's going to hate it. In the
I
same
hate
way,
the sound of my own voice.
It, yes, right. It says that it hates the sound of your voice because that's something that will get you not to do it.
I do listen to the archives pretty much every day.
It's not the same. I mean, it's great. I'm not discouraging that, certainly, but it's not the same. So I'm going to encourage you to get over it.
Willingness is the key.
That's right. So just get over it. Just get
kind of do it anyway.
Over it. That's right. And what you say is, huh, well, now I'm going to actually listen to the sound of my voice because it is my voice. And so I'm going to listen to the person whose voice this is. Now, if this were a real person, say, somebody that I love, how likely am I to say, you know, I don't want to talk with you anymore because I really hate the sound of your voice. Yeah? So that's not going to happen. And so that's how we know that it's karmic conditioning, self-hate, who is making that statement. Because there's nothing authentic in you that would make a statement like that. That's what makes my job.
I wouldn't make that statement about anybody.
No, of course not. Of course not.
I really wouldn't hate anybody else's voice.
No, of course not. Only karmic conditioning takes those kinds of positions. And for a reason, right? It serves karmic conditioning to affirm those kinds of things. That's why it's important for us to acknowledge to ourselves that we disagree with that and to take a stand for not going along with that. That's not true. I don't believe it. I don't accept that. Nope, not going there. So that would be, for me, step one. Well, step one is to get clear about that. You know, I'm a sentient being. Sentient beings have emotions. I have emotions. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I have emotions. Excuse me. Emotions allow me to express love and caring and happiness and joy and sadness and sorrow and upset. And
they don't last forever.
And I wouldn't want not to be able to do that. You would be in
No, I really don't want that.
Oh, excuse me. I just got all choked up over this. So that's the first step. Then you record and listen so that you're reminding yourself regularly that that's what's going on. The third step that I would encourage is for you to practice being really emotional.
Whoa, wait, what?
Yeah. So every time you hear that conditioning take off, oh, excuse me, you play that recording. It reminds you that you're a feeling being and you're feeling and you're having emotions and then you be emotional. Scream, yell, laugh out loud, watch a sad movie or tell yourself a sad story and cry. Throw things.
Try
to break something
I can't.
Other than your recorder.
Yeah, big resistance.
Of course. Now, who do you
Not
think is
resistance.
Resisting? Who do you think is resisting?
Yeah.
So you are shut down and isolated when you're emotional. Karmic conditioning wants you shut down and isolated. It wants you living in a story of what's wrong with you and what a bad person you are. Okay? It doesn't want you to listen to any information to the contrary. And if there's something that you can do to go beyond that blockage, it's going to resist it. None of this is surprising.
It seems to be happening whether I will or not.
The emotion?
Yeah.
Well, of course.
I mean, I've got a lot of conditioning around keeping the emotions gardened and maintained and so forth, but recently they're just all over the place.
Of course. And that can be the good news and the bad news. So you can't keep it together, which is how you can push through this. It's also something that karmic conditioning is going to use to torture you at new, higher, lower, wider levels.
We are here to pay attention. We're not here to create and cling to beliefs.
Exactly. So using this opportunity to turn this around, of course, is your very, very best option.
But they're okay and they don't mean anything.
It's going to take being proactive. You can't sit back and hope that it's going to get better, because it won't.
Which is where my work comes into play. I do for others what I don't do for myself, and I get up in the morning and my work is set up as practice, and I've been doing it for a long time. It's proactive.
Yes.
Where I run into danger, where I run into conditioning, is non-work time.
Yes. So that's the time for you to explore your emotions.
Yeah.
It's like it's a workshop.
That's kind of what's up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I mean, I hope that you're stepped back far enough that you can see that it's a script. It's a formula. I mean, I could lay it out. You could probably lay it out as a formula, as a recipe for anybody else. This is what karmic conditioning does. It picks a topic. It says you can't do that. You're a bad person if you do. Oops, you do. There's proof that you're a bad person. You get tortured by it. You try to compensate. You try to get around it. You try to make deals. You try to whatever. Nothing works. No matter what you do, it's not good enough. No matter what you try, doesn't help. And then we could just plug in the content of people's lives into that script. So the only way out of that is to stop playing the game.
Stop playing the game. Yes.
Yeah. So if someone, Jonathan was talking about it earlier. You know, if somebody says you're not good enough and you believe that they are an authority and they know that and it's true, then you will act out of that and live your life according to that. Is it true? No. But they said it, and you believe it. As soon as you don't believe that you're not good enough, then you're free to do anything you want to do. But as long as you believe it, you will hold yourself in bondage. Nobody has to do a thing to you. You'll do it to yourself.
Yep. Again and yet again.
Yes. So the work is to realize that you don't need to believe that, and that when you don't believe it, you're free. When you prove that to yourself, then you're free.
Okay. Being proactive.
Yep. Your assignment. Get recorder number 5 and get busy.
Thank you, Sherry.
You are so very welcome. Let me know.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened?
beautiful heart.
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, one if you swam in a river of joy.
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porch Dog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, geez. It's Valerie from Minnesota.
Hey, Valerie.
Not on.
Ooh, we have kind of a rough connection.
We do.
Yeah.
Is that better?
A little bit, yeah. I thought you were from somewhere else. You're from Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota is really close to North Dakota.
I see. Okay. All right. Good.
I'm actually in Minnesota.
Oh, all right. Good. All right. Just checking. How's it going?
I had my voice recorder and I recorded some spiraling downwards into some hard.
You know what? This phone connection is not good. Michael, can you understand Valerie?
Not very well. Is there anything you can do, Valerie, on your end?
Is this better?
Yes, it sounds like it so far. Let's try it again.
Yeah, so I guess maybe I'm just calling about what Biddy thinks personally and egocentricity is going to play into me listening to the recordings of me kind of going through a lot of hard stuff, but then Dave said to not feel ashamed because that's part of conditioning. That's just another way that something's wrong. If you're feeling afraid of your habitual patterns being exposed again on the recorder.
Okay, so I am having trouble hearing you. Let me see if I'm tracking. So you make a recording, and then you get information that what you've said or what you've revealed is shameful, that you should feel bad about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because it's all wrong. It's going to sound really arrogant. It's going to sound really egocentric. And it's going to be really embarrassing. And I don't want to listen to it, but part of me really does want to listen to it.
Yes.
So that I can know my karmic cycle downwards.
So are you pretty clear about who doesn't want you to listen and who wants you to feel bad about what's on there?
Yes.
Okay.
Go, and then part of me is excited, and then part of me is terrified, and I just throw the recorder down on the bed. It's not on the floor. It's going to be broken yet, but I do throw it on the bed because I don't want to listen to it, but I do.
Okay. Yes. And so, you know, that process in itself is a really powerful one. because what you're getting to see is what karmic conditioning feels like when it takes over your body and mind and starts acting out.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, and then you also...
It's scary to look at, too.
Say what?
Sorry to interrupt, but it's scary. It's scary.
Yes, it is scary. Yep, it is scary, which is why we want to give support to the folks inside of us who have been frightened and intimidated and bullied and beaten up and badgered by karmic conditioning and self-hate.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, nobody would tell you that this process you're going through is easy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just that it's easier than spending a lifetime in increasing levels of suffering.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
So, my encouragement, you must have taken the first email class, huh?
Yeah.
And so my encouragement, as you know, is to stick with the inspiring, uplifting information that you put on the recorder for the young parts of you. Yeah?
And with the parts that are scary?
And the what?
And then the scary parts there, you know.
Well, just for, you know, for now, while you're building up your courage muscles about this, just simply focus on information, loving, kind, supportive information for all of the young parts of you. So sing them songs. And tell them how much you love them and how wonderful they are and point out all of the things that they're good at and that they do well and what you like about them and what you appreciate most and what you're grateful for in your life and, you know, sing thank you songs and that sort of thing.
Great. I'm going to do recorder number two then, and I'm going to take all that stuff and put on recorder number two, and I'm going to have recorder number one for a lot of hard stuff.
Yeah. So with the hard stuff, you know, I don't encourage people to let karmic conditioning get a hold of the recorder and rant and rave and carry on.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
That's what happened, though. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't have...
Yep. That's great. We live and learn.
Let it go.
Let it go.
Let it go.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Just let it go. And, you know, when somebody's upset, they can talk on the recorder, and then the mentor can come in and give them encouragement and support and that sort of thing. But don't ever, ever, ever let a voice of self-hate come on and talk to you and then try to talk you into listening to that message.
Because it felt like I really had an upsetting experience, but then I was going through it. I was like, upset and then no mistakes. Upset, no shame. Upset and like going back and forth with like, no, I'm not going to believe that. No, I'm not going to believe that. Like, you's were coming at me. But just, I don't know. The you's are so helpful. The you's are so helpful. The voice that calls me you is so easy to detect.
It's so what?
It's so easy to detect.
Yeah. Yeah. And so your job now is to practice delivering that loving kindness to all of the folks who need it. Folks who are afraid, insecure, anxious, you know, who get called names and whatever, and you're just taking care of them the way you know they need to be taken care of.
Yes.
Okay? Are you going to do the next class?
I hope so.
Yes. You do your best.
Really. Yes.
Yeah, and because, you know, it's an opportunity for us, again, to explore all of these kinds of issues and maybe get those voices on the run.
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Thanks.
Michael and Sherry.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Valerie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we've got about 5 minutes, and we have another caller.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, getting adjusted to the cold and the snow again.
Ooh. And apparently none of us, we're in this together, right? I just learned that recently, like 49, that can't be right. Anyway, just about every one of the main states in the United States had snow.
Yes, that has happened.
Yeah, so we can all sympathize with one another.
Well, yeah, and we had kind of this false hope for spring.
We did, didn't we? We loved those few sunny days, didn't we?
Yes, totally.
Yeah, now we're back to the dead of winter.
So the one of the previous calls was really helpful for me because what the discussion about emotion,
mm-hmm.
because I feel, you know, I'm just getting this conversation that I'm flatlining, you know, that there's nothing going on, there's never going to be anything going on, you know, that I don't have any energy and enthusiasm, and why is that? And, you know, I could say, well, it's because I just keep getting bombarded with the voices of conditioning that just want to tell me that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at it, do you ever play a game like, if you could do anything in the world that you want to do, what would you do?
Yeah, that's one of the places I think conditioning really gets me hung up, because I just won't really get to that place where, you know, what do I really want for myself? You know, whether it's doing something or being someone or, you know, even a little thing, it's like, what do I want? And my life seems to be in this sort of straight and narrow rut.
Uh-huh.
Not a lot of, you know, I don't feel a lot of energy in my body, and a lot of that gets blamed on my health issues, you know, that they just keep cycling around, and that, you know, who wouldn't feel depressed if you didn't just have all these things just
uh-huh.
happening. But somewhere in there, and I think I said this to you at one point, when I listened to that recording, The Mystery, you know, I was a completely different person. So I'm suspicious about how it's being held in place.
I think you are very wise to be suspicious about that.
Yeah. But I'm not seeing, well, other than that discussion that says, you know, start being Italian, which that could work for me,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I just am not, from this conditioned view, I'm not seeing a place where there's even a glimmer of those first couple spring-like days, you know, to be a relief from this sort of flatlining experience.
Mm-hmm. So nothing to be excited about, nothing to... nothing that you'd like to do, nothing to turn your energy toward.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, and it just feels like that lid is being kept on that in that way. You know, I guess the other part of that conversation was I have to be proactive and deliberate. You know, if you're going to sit around and in this identified place and wait for some excitement, it's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, and nothing is ever going to get better. The odds are really, really slim that it's going to get better from that waiting place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Waiting and listening to voices beat you up.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not going to get tired of doing that.
They don't seem to, no.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we hear these stories all the time, and so we can sense the truth in them. It's one of those, and if you only had a year to live, how would you live it? And almost everybody knows that they would live it differently from the way they're currently living.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really interesting spiritual question, because what is the thinking behind that? I'm going to live life the way I don't want to live it until what?
Right. Right. Yeah, and yet, you know, when I have heard that question, or I think it was a recent tweet, you know, what if this is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the door just is being held closed. You know, it's like, don't go there. Don't look at that.
Yeah.
Don't examine this.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too much, whatever
yeah.
it is.
So, of course, you know that that's exactly what you must do.
Yeah, I keep, the latest one is, oh, just wait till you go on retreat, you know, then you can start to, but
yeah.
of course, you know, why wait?
Exactly.
Any longer.
Exactly, and, you know, I mean, we know what's going on, so I don't have to say anything about that. The thing that conditioning doesn't want us to realize is that the view of life that we have is completely made up. It's all completely made up. And so we could make up any reality that we wanted to make up. And exploring that as a game doesn't mean anything. So the implications that I think a lot of folks are conditioned into, if you let yourself know the life that you would really like to have, then you would have to do that, and then that would bring up all kinds of other things. I don't want to deal with those other things. That's too hard. I can't do that. And then we've gone full circle back into kind of a helpless, hopeless place.
Right, I follow you. But if it's all made up, then you can make up anyway and just explore it and follow that exploration without it meaning anything.
Precisely. Because it doesn't mean anything now.
Right, right.
So why
and that's
should,
the...
Yeah, so why should we let a different made-up world mean any more than this made-up world mean?
Right. Right.
But, of course, this made-up world, whatever it is, whatever our karma has us tied to, we are meant to believe is very real, has great meaning, even though almost nobody could say what that great meaning is.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I just have to be this person. Well, I don't know why, but I just have to be this person. So one of the things that's fascinated me forever is that people will get into really awful places in their lives and live in a place of either thinking about committing suicide or attempting to commit suicide or committing suicide. And what it seems to me is that the missing piece there, and having been one of those people, I can attest to this from my own experience, it would be possible simply to say, you know, the life that I'm living, I'm really unhappy in. And so I'm going to go live another life. Now, if I'm really unhappy in that one, then I'll see where I am. But the idea is I'm really unhappy in this one, and it's the only possibility for me. So my only choice, if I don't want to live it, is to kill myself. When actually, if I don't want to live this life, every other possible life that I could imagine is available to me.
Right, right. Yeah, I saw that last night on my reflective listening call, that rather than looking at something being wrong, if everything is okay, then anything is possible.
Yes.
That freedom, you know, then you have the freedom to choose whichever, whatever.
Yes, yeah. So good. I'm very glad to hear you say that. And to take that attitude of it's a workshop. It's a retreat. And I can make up guided imageries, and I can make up exercises, and I can do all sorts of exploration to see what is real and true for me, and what I believe, and what I want, and what I choose, and what I think I can't want and can't choose, and where that comes from. I can do that.
Okay. Well, I've got my assignment.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Good night,
Greta.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry,
thank
I didn't
you,
sit at the beginning, and it's a tremendous privilege to participate in this show.
It is, isn't it? And great fun to boot.
Yes, it is.
As we've always, I think we always get here. We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
Yeah. Let's keep being lucky, Michael.
Okay, great.